This is ILTA Radio, the source for legal technology practices and ideas to help your career delivered to fit your busy schedule. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.
Welcome, ILTA members, to a post-ILTAcon Law Firm 101 series recap. We are here today with Jay Hall and Gwen McAlpine, the two speakers of Lawyer, Who They Are, and What They Practice, the first session of the Law Firm 101 series. Thank you for joining me. So let's dive right in. What can you tell me about a lawyer's role within a law firm?
Well, a lawyer in a law firm is the fee earner. So they're doing the work that generates the revenue for the firm. They, you know, have clients they do work for that is based on the needs of those clients. They're, you know, solving legal problems, which often bleed into business problems as well. So, you know, just kind of at its basic level, the lawyers are the ones that are out there serving the clients with their needs. And then, you know, kind of the rest of the firm is providing the structure to support them to do what it is that they need to do.
And lawyers can fall into several different categories. There are the partners who are the owners of the firm. And depending on the way the firm is structured, they can also be called shareholders. That's just a matter of the corporate formalities or organizational formalities for the law firm itself. And then there are typically associates, and those are not owners of the firm, but they're, as Gwen mentioned, they're also revenue generating, service providing personnel within the law firm. And some law firms have lawyers in additional roles, such as general counsel. This tends to be for larger firms that have complicated legal issues of their own, where they want to have somebody internal advising the firm about ethics issues, conflicts issues, its own contractual issues, disputes that arise with respect to the firm's services, for example. So those are some additional roles that lawyers fill within a law firm.
Now, during the presentation, you guys covered several pressures on lawyers today, but what do you feel are the top three that they are facing?
Okay. Thank you. I'll go first because that way I don't have to worry about whether Gwen might repeat.
I have to come up with something unique.
So I would say billing, quality, and relationship management. So billing, there are typically expectations for the number of hours that are billed in a month or a year. And related to that is sort of the quality of the hours that are billed so that there's not a lot of time written off. And it's a challenge to deliver really high quality work, my second pressure, really high quality work where you're also having to keep an eye on the amount of time that's spent, both because you want the bill to be fair and show good value for the client, and also as a financial matter for the firm, that you don't want there to be a large amount of time that's written off that's not billed client, that even though you may have felt it was necessary to really deliver a quality product. So that the balance of billing and quality can be a real challenge and is a stressor for many lawyers. And then the last one that I mentioned, relationship management, it's just a factor of normal human relations and the fact that your lawyers are serving clients where there's often a high degree of pressure involved, maybe a very emotional case or dispute or project. It might be a bet the company kind of a project or a internal family relationship issue and the lawyers involved in that. So there are those relationships to manage with clients in high pressure situations. And then also, of course, all the internal relationships among partners or among associates with staff or other professionals within the law firm and with leaders of the law firm as well. And so those are my top three pressures, I would say.
I would agree with that, Jay. And I kind of expand on it or take a slightly different take. On billing, I'm going to use this opportunity to refer back to our presentation. I encourage you all to listen to the recording, but we talk a bit about the billable hour and breaking that down to really understand what's billable and what's not billable, and then looking at what that billable requirement is for lawyers and, you know, starting to break that down to understand what that means on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, the upshot of it is that, you know, just to meet the minimum expectations, a lawyer has a, you know, a very full day every day. They may need to work, you know, 10 hours a day just to meet minimum expectations. So meeting that billable hour requirement is an enormous pressure. You are always trying to find enough work to meet that billable requirement, but also kind of manage your schedule so that you can accommodate things like your non-billable responsibilities. So that may be things related to like firm committees or CLEs or, you know, heck, keeping up with your timesheets. That's all non-billable work. But it's something that's required to be done. That's part of your job. You need to do that, but it doesn't count towards that, you know, that billable number that you're trying to hit. And then on top of that, you know, lawyers are trying to balance all of those work pressures with their, you know, their life outside of work as well. Business development, I should have mentioned that. That's another huge non-billable responsibility, you know, that they need to spend time on, and but yet still meet that billable number. So the billing pressure is huge. And I think that most lawyers will say that they have a little bit of a, you know, internal clock that's constantly ticking in their head.
That's really good, Gwen. I was going to say, in addition, if you want to do some pro bono time or want to serve on a bar committee, I mean, the point is simply that, as you said, basically just serving the clients and delivering the kind of billable hours that you're expected to require, that's a full-time job or almost a full-time job right there. And then all of the other pressures on top. Yeah, you're right. That really adds a significant burden to the life of the working lawyer.
Yeah, and that kind of leads into my next point would be just the competing priorities that lawyers have to juggle, because they do have all of these needs that the clients have, responsibilities that they have to their firm, responsibilities that they have to their profession, and it's a constant sort of, you know, time management struggle to you know, to kind of balance all of those. You're constantly looking at what are all of the things that I need to do for my clients and when are they due by and what kind of lead time do I need on that. Lawyers actually tend to have fairly innate project management skills because of this, but they are constantly, you know, managing these to-do lists and juggling all of these priorities and trying to slot things in to make sure that they are, you know, A, filling their day to meet that billable requirement, but then on the flip side, able to meet all of those responsibilities that they have. And I think for a lot of lawyers, it's more challenging to, you know, fit all of those responsibilities into a day rather than, you know, figuring out how to fill your time. And then the third pressure that I would say is, I think kind of combines Jay's second and third one a little bit. It's just around the client demands. The client, you know, the client is your customer. This is who's providing your business, and you know, you have a relationship with them, but you're also trying to meet what it is that they are expecting of you. And sometimes that can be, you know, it can be difficult just because of all these competing priorities that we were talking about. But it could even be things with a meeting of the minds on what it is that the client really needs and, you know, kind of understanding the larger business picture of what they're trying to achieve and what their objectives might be. So, you know, for a lawyer, there might be a tendency to be very thorough in leaving no stone uncovered and really, you know, doing the best work for the client, because that's kind of what we're taught to do, is to zealously represent your client. And in some cases for the client, that may not be what they need, that what they're looking for is maybe a, you know, kind of back of the envelope type assessment on something. And so, you know, getting that meeting of the minds with the client is challenging. Keeping on top of all the things you need to do is challenging, that relationship management as well. And then, you know, I think as recently there's been quite a shift in the legal industry and just the relationship between clients and law firms, with clients being a lot savvier about how can I best leverage my law firm to support my needs. And so I think that adds another layer of, you know, kind of understanding the client's business, the business of law, you know, even things like legal operations, to be able to serve your client in the best way possible.
Those are fantastic insights into what lawyers tend to be dealing with today. That was wonderful. Thank you. Let me shift gears just a little bit. What do you feel the differences between in-house and outside counsel are?
Yeah, there are a number of differences that are really quite significant. And they, I would say, to a large extent, they relate to some of the items that we were just discussing. Clearly, if you're in-house counsel, you have the same pressures to deliver high-quality work product and to deliver that in a timely fashion and to understand and meet the expectation of your client. But the client relationship is different because, of course, it's not a third-party client where you might have fee disputes, for example, and you have to negotiate the appropriate hourly rate and other financially related matters. Your client is the department that sits just down the hall or across the country in another office. So the pressure for quality is there clearly, but the financial arrangements are different. And Gwen and I were chatting about this a bit, even though timekeeping is the norm for outside counsel, and I think it's fair to say not the norm for in-house counsel, but many in-house counsel are still expected to track time because they want to know for internal organizational purposes how they're allocating their time as a matter of internal expense management. Are they allocating the right amount of time to the right kinds of projects, and are they spending too much time on more routine or lower value projects instead of moving up the value curve to work on projects that will really benefit from the in-house lawyer's special knowledge and expertise about the internal client base? Or is it something that can really be shifted to outside counsel? For example, those pressures, those responsibilities are very different in the in-house arena, even though, as I say, the quality requirement is certainly just as high.
I would agree with that. I think it's a, it's kind of a completely different job, I think, in-house versus practicing law within a law firm. There's a lot more, there's a couple things with the scope of work that faces in-house counsel is very different than a lawyer in a law firm. Lawyers in law firms tend to specialize more by their area of practice. And when you're in-house, of course, depending on the size of the company and the size of their legal department, this is going to vary greatly. But when you're in-house, there's less ability for that legal department to have specialists within it. So everyone has to kind of practice at a more general level, which means that you might be fielding questions about areas of law that you don't really know anything about. So, you know, for example, you know, employment law or environmental law or, you know, something about like product trials. Those could be things that you don't have a lot of expertise in, but you've got to be able to issue spot to know, you know, is there an issue here? Is there something I need to get involved in? Is there something I need to bring in-house outside counsel into? So there's this scope of work that in-house counsel deals with that law firms, you know, to some extent when you're advising a corporation, you're dealing with a lot of issues in issue spotting, but it's not quite to the same level as in-house. And then with in-house, there is a volume of, you know, similar type matters that they may be dealing with for, you know, I'm thinking particularly around like contract review or their own company's NDAs and statements of work and license agreements and so on. They may be dealing with those at volume, and it's all based on sort of the same type of agreement. So, you know, I think from like the legal tech perspective, we're actually seeing some really interesting developments in legal tech for in-house counsel, because they do have, you know, sort of this higher volume of work around a same form of agreement or template. So there's a lot more opportunity there to automate, you know, the document or the workflows or, you know, provide negotiating platforms. So that's a little different than where on you know, in a law firm, a lawyer is dealing with clients from, you know, lots of different industries with lots of different problems. So you may be dealing with, you know, even if you're dealing with license agreements all the time, it's completely different, you know, with every client depending on their line of work. So there's some pretty substantial differences between in-house and in a law firm.
Yeah, and one of the newer developments that's come out of the context that Gwen has just described is the rise of the legal operations professional. And mm-hmm. and that's something that really we didn't see very much of, say, 10 years ago. But there's a lot greater attention now from the client side, from the in-house legal staff, about the efficiency of outside counsel and whether the right people are being put on the work based on skill and expertise and billing rate and various factors. Also comparing this firm against that firm to see if the results are about the same, or if one firm actually tends to get better results or to get the work done more efficiently. So there's a much higher level of attention paid to hard data and to make decisions based on those data for selection of outside counsel and assignment of particular projects to particular firms, or even to particular lawyers within a firm based on that lawyer's efficiency and quality of work.
One of the items you addressed during your session deals with common lawyer personality profiles. Would you like to elaborate a little bit more on why that matters for our listeners?
Yeah, sure. In our presentation at ILTACON, we talked about a personality study that was done by Larry Richard from the Lawyer Brain, and it identifies 6 personality traits where lawyers differ significantly from the population. And I'm not going to go into those traits in detail. I encourage you to go watch the recording to get some more information about that. But, you know, the point is that there is some, you know, hard evidence out there that shows that the sort of average lawyer personality type is different than the average non-lawyer personality type. And, you know, these 6 personality traits are the ones that they identified. And understanding what those traits are and how they impact, you know, the success of a lawyer, and then how you can work with them, I think really helps people who don't hold those traits to know how to work with that population a little better. So these are traits that, you know, historically have made lawyers very successful who they are. There's some debate as to whether, you know, people are born with it or people sort of develop it because they've worked in the industry. You know, but certainly there are these hallmark traits that kind of make lawyers, you know, who they are and good at what they do. But because the profession is very, you know, it's very precise, it's very exacting, you know, there's some things that you need to do to be a lawyer, to be successful as a lawyer, that might not be required, you know, for other jobs or in other walks of life. And, you know, that's what kind of makes them a little different. So I think that understanding that is something that can be very powerful for someone who works with lawyers. And, you know, it helps you kind of understand what motivates them, but then also, you know, how to work with them, how to interpret the way that they are, you know, behaving that you may see as different. It may be, you know, something that is, you know, kind of perfectly natural to them or leads to them being successful and being able to represent their clients well.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. And just to take one of the character traits, psychological profile of lawyers that Gwen mentioned in the slide, skepticism. I think I might have mentioned this in the actual presentation, but in law school, we're rewarded for identifying issues even if we don't know the answer. And and then we're, of course, rewarded additionally when we're working with clients and we can see potential problems that the client or others might not have recognized. And that can be a little disconcerting when a technology professional is making a presentation about some new initiative that she has in mind, and she's talking to a group of lawyers and she's immediately confronted with all of the potential risks and downsides, and then what about this and what about that? And that can really be demoralizing in some contexts. And I think, in line with what Gwen has said, it's helpful to bear in mind that is first an aspect of people that are drawn to the legal profession, and then it's that trait is enhanced in the way we're trained. Mm-hmm. And it helps, it's what you want from a lawyer when you're engaged in receiving legal advice. But then to keep in mind that the lawyer may well feel that he or she is doing you a service by pointing out risks and potential issues, and that doesn't necessarily mean that your IT proposal is is dead on arrival or is not a good idea or shouldn't be pursued. So to me, that's just, I offer that as an example of a place where having a bit of empathy for the lawyer profile, the way lawyers are trained and the common psychological characteristics of lawyers will be helpful to understand the kind of feedback that they're providing and to be able to work through some of the interpersonal challenges that can arise as a result.
Yeah, that's a great point, Jay. And I think that the skepticism one is one that's very difficult for, you know, maybe creates a bit of confrontation among lawyers and the rest of the population. For lawyers, it's a trait that, you know, there's kind of a scale for this. So as you know, 50 is average and lawyers rank at 90, which is extremely high. And that means it's also very difficult to turn off. But the thing that I like to tell people about skepticism in particular is, you know, A, anticipate questions. Lawyers are going to ask questions. And the more that you can answer them, the more, you know, kind of credibility you're going to have with that. You know, the second thing is don't treat this as a personal attack. It's not, you know, it's not about you. This is really this skepticism and poking holes and asking questions. This is part of the thought process for lawyers. This is part of how they validate the strength of an argument or, you know, gather more information. So you have to just understand that this is part of a process. And as Jay said, you know, they think they're helping you with helping you identify those risks and make your proposal stronger. So when you take it in that vein, you know, we can all sort of work together in understanding, you know, how we're going to do this and anticipate those questions and allow those questions to help you rather than being, you know, kind of off-putting.
Mm-hmm. That's really a good advice, Gwen. And as you're saying that, it occurs to me that, in fact, it might be helpful just to acknowledge right early on in the conversation, if you're presenting to a group of lawyers, for example, you probably don't want to say, I've read the survey and I know you're all in the 90% for skepticism, but you might actually just invite them to help you by pointing out areas that perhaps need additional attention or where some additional polish could be applied to a presentation and help them get on side with what you're looking to do. And I think most lawyers that I've worked with would actually welcome that kind of opportunity, especially if they feel like they're not dragging your project down. They're helping you to make it better and more likely to succeed. I think you can gain an ally in that kind of an approach.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I think in that same vein, lawyers can also make exceptional testers. They will find the things wrong.
Mm-hmm. That was fantastic. Thank you, guys. Before we wrap up, do you guys have any last minute parting words that you would like to give to our members, either recapping the session or something that you feel that you would like to share that you thought about afterwards?
Well, I'll just say that I think it's really important to understand the operating environment that we're in. And that's true of all of us, regardless of our profession or our background or our family situation, our personal values, whatever it is. Just as a human being, it's important to understand our operating environment. And I don't think enough attention has been paid to that in the past for the legal context. And I'm glad that more attention is being paid to that these days. So I really commend to our listeners the slides that Gwen include on the psychological profile of lawyers and the comments that she made there, as well as her comments about the billing pressures and the details of the billing arrangements. It's not that we all need to feel sorry for lawyers. I mean, it's a very rewarding profession in a number of ways, and you get to work with really interesting people within your organization and outside. And so there are tremendous benefits and advantages to being involved in that role. But it's helpful for everyone to understand more about the working styles and pressures and challenges that other members of the organization face. So, and by the way, if I were speaking to a group of lawyers, I'd say the same thing to them about understanding the technologists that they work with. It will just, mm-hmm. the organization as a whole will move forward better if there's a deeper level of empathy, trust is building within the organization, and if there's a deeper knowledge base about these kinds of interpersonal relationships and how they affect the organization as a whole. So that's my parting comment.
Yeah, I agree, Jay. I think this is really about coming from a place of empathy and understanding the nature of the organization that you're in. I know it's kind of a popular discussion topic about whether legal is different or not. There's a lot of areas in which it is. And, you know, if you're in the legal industry, you know, it's going to serve you to understand understand what makes law firms unique, what some of the different pressures are on lawyers and, you know, different constraints that law firms have on the way that they do business. So I'm glad that ILTA is doing this Law Firm 101 series. I think it's something that can really help people, whether you've been in law firms for a while or if you're new to legal, to really understand the environment that we're working in. So thank you, ILTA, for putting this together.
Yeah, thanks very much.
Thank you. This was wonderful feedback on an already wonderful presentation that you both gave at ILTACON. Thank you for spending time with me today just to give a little more information for our members, and we greatly appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
To our members, a link to the ILTACON session will be provided on the podcast page with this recording. Please take some time, if you haven't already, to listen to who they are and what they practice. And thank you again for joining us today. Thank you.
You've been listening to ILTA Radio. Subscribe to ILTA's podcasts through iTunes or Podbean and get alerted about new recordings. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.